The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Psychovertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. Well, another week has gone by, and there's a storm warning over here, so we're on standby for the roof getting ripped off by some Atlantic gale. So if you hear any noise while I'm recording this, that's just the roof coming off. So what am I talking about this week? I don't really know. I've just finished a very in-depth look at race vests on my Substack, which is it's kind of like a prehistory of the race vest, which sounds very exciting, which is looking at like sort of webbing from the Second World War, First World War, poachers kind of clothing, all the history of the pocket, lots of interesting stuff in there, so check that out. I had this idea about doing a podcast with my dad, but I spoke to him yesterday, and he was telling me about a friend of his who's got this job in Yorkshire on an old firing range where they've been dropping bombs for like 100 years. And apparently this range has like thousands of unexploded bombs on it, and it's next to the sea. And as the sea is eroding, the bombs are falling out of the cliff onto the beach. So his job is to go along and collect them and blow them up. He is actually qualified as a bomb disposal person. Just to point that out. It's not just like a normal job. So I was telling my dad, I was like, do you remember that time when we went to this bombing range when we were kids and we were walking along, and I was like absolutely shitting myself because there was like big holes in the ground on the track we were on where bombs had basically gone into the ground. And it was a place where those A-10 Thunderbolts used to fly over a lot and fire their, you just fly over and they'd be like, and it would fire like 70 bullets in a second or something. Anyway, so we were walking along this thing. I was utterly terrified I was going to get blown up at any second. And suddenly my dad was behind me and he was like, lads, catch this. And he basically turned around. He had a bomb in his hand. It's like 2 foot long blue bomb, and he threw it at us, and but anyway, it turned out it was a plastic bomb. It was a practice bomb, but we didn't know that. So anyway, so I was telling my dad this story, and he was like, I have no recollection of that whatsoever. So I've kind of come to the conclusion it's pointless having a podcast with him about his early days in the mountain rescue and stuff, because he doesn't remember anything. So it would just be me recounting stories I remember that he has no recollection about. I was talking to my daughter, and I basically communicate to my children through Facebook, but I don't have a Facebook account, so I use my wife's Facebook account. I sort of ring them via Facebook because I don't have a phone either. And I made a terrible mistake, is that as soon as I finished talking to my daughter, who's got really into training, she's been going to the gym like every day, and she's been drinking What's that stuff, that powder, protein powder? It's like amazing, young people, what stuff they get into. Anyway, so I made a terrible mistake. I just finished talking to her and I started scrolling down, like, oh, see if my wife's having an affair with anybody. But I was like scrolling down the news feed. Oh God, that's just always such a mistake to do that. You always get drawn into some, you know, drama or something, or something that makes you click or get angry or something. And anyway, so I ended up scrolling down, and there was this headline from Climbing magazine. Like, I kind of got this thing now, if anything is coming from Climbing magazine, outside or Rock and Ice, it's basically going to be bullshit. Basically, it's going to be, it's just not of any use in my life, really. So anyway, the headline was, "The climbing community has been the source of my deepest pain," by the CEO of the American Alpine Club. Mitsu is Anyway, so basically, me not being able to pronounce his name proves QED that climbing is racist and white people are racist. Like, the lack of disrespect for me not to go away and Google and, you know, find a... I actually did Google and find how I pronounce his name, but I just can't remember it. So, I'm willing to admit to my deeply held... I'm not just subconsciously, you know, don't like Japanese people. I actively go out my way to offend them by mispronouncing my name. And if he was going to call me Andrew Kilpatrick, I would feel exactly the same about him. Like, probably, I would say, like, 50% of people call me Andrew Kilpatrick, not Andrew Kirkpatrick. Kilpatrick is Irish. Kirkpatrick is Scottish. And I feel exactly the same. Those people are just hate Scottish people. And I just... You know, I just often spit in their faces when they say it, and they kind of don't really get it why I'm doing that. Anyway, so the article, you can go and read it. It's not very long. It's basically one of these things. You know, you're either a victim or you're a victimizer. You know, you're either guilty or, you know, you've been what's the other opposite of being guilty? You're either a criminal or you're a victim of some crime, social crime. Anyway, so the basically thing is about basically how old climbers are racist, an American climbers more so whatsoever as well. And they're not only, you know, it's basically they're racist, misogynistic, anti-trans, you know, they're basically scum. You know, all climbers are scum, you know. Maybe not all of them. I'm sure there's some good ones. You know, many of my friends are climbers. And, you know, they're not all bad. But most of them are. And they don't even know it. That's the worst thing. You know, when someone says, like, hurry up, the Japs are catching us up. Like, that person just deserves to be locked away. Or maybe have their career. Like, to use the term Japs is... Not only is it offensive, it's just evil, basically. Using the word Brits, I feel the same about that. If someone says, oh, you're a Brit, I'm always like, you racist fucker, you know, and I often just walk out, you know, just walk straight out, you know. If someone says, like, oh, you're from Northern England, or do you like Manchester United? I'm like, you racist bastard. And I just walk straight out, you know, like I just can't be doing it. So this article was, is in there. Go and read it. You don't need to read it, really. Like, a lot of, so much today, you don't actually have to physically go and look at anything, because just by me explaining, you just know what it's like, written by an algorithm. Basically, you just type in your name. It's like the algorithm's like, that sounds like a Japanese name. I'll just move together a few sentences, a few like things, and we'll just make it's just created. That's I think if we don't live in a simulation, There is a simulation that exists at the moment, and it's just basically this online simulation of people's. The AI is taking over people's brains, and they're just you know, the simulation isn't like the Matrix. It's actually it's like an internal simulation inside everyone's minds, apart from mine and a few people. But I would actually like to be assimilated into that thing. I am trying. So anyway, so I was thinking about this. I was thinking of making a response to this, but then I just thought, like, why would I bother? Because although I could make a lot of very good points that would prove that this person is just coming at everything in the wrong direction, and that the world is not as evil and people aren't as evil. Like, people are people, really. That's what they're it's just the way they are. You know, when someone says, like, you know, if you're in Ireland and you say to a black person, where you're from, you know, and that person was not from Nigeria, they were from Cork and they were born in Ireland, it doesn't make that person a racist. The same way as when I'm in Kenya and someone says, where you're from, like, you know, they're not racist either. It's just what people fucking do. And if someone says to you, to a black person in Ireland, like, these are all examples that I've heard many times, like, oh, I didn't see you walking down the street, you know, the country lane with no street lights because you're black. That's not racism. That is actually a fact. When you're in Africa, you know, this thing is never drive at night. And if you drive at night, you will actually notice, if you're driving in really remote places where there's no street lighting or whatever, it's actually very hard to see someone whose skin is black in the dark. Like, I know it's science and all that shit, but it doesn't mean that person is racist who says that thing. So it's one of these, you know, it's one of these things. If you, I probably told this story, but I remember once when I started, like, losing my shit about the way the world was heading, this, like, 2012 or something, about the beginning of this kind of racist kind of thing. My kids started, like, joking that I was racist. And one day there was a, you know, my dad's racist and all that kind of stuff. And then one day a kid was around, my son's friend. And my brother was like, my son was like, oh, my dad's racist. And this kid was like, oh, I've got a joke for you. And he told this joke. I don't remember what it was now, but it was fucking racist. And I was like, do not ever say that joke again. That is totally out of order to say something like that. And so when you experience real racism, you know exactly what it is. And I kind of would say I experienced real racism several dozen times a day through social media. And I know exactly what it is, and I don't like it. And anyway, I haven't got, I just cannot be asked anymore to try and push back about any of this stuff. I just do not have the time or the energy, because it is pointless. Because to my mind, like, most people, their brains have been captured. They do not even know what is real and what's not real anymore, and what you would class as just human nature and all that kind of stuff. And it's pointless me wasting my time doing it when I'm just going to get, like, slated for it on Mountain Project or Reddit or something, that I'm by trying to defend mankind of all its colors and genders, that proves that I am racist. So but a little aside to that is one analogy. One thing I was of this story where when I went to Mount Kenya, we had like most people when they go to Kenya climbing and stuff, they basically hire someone and they're on a group or whatever, and they get driven around, and, you know, there's someone driving the car. Like, in Kenya, I think it's got like about 5,000 people a year die on the roads. It's like the most dangerous roads in the world. And but we hired a car. So we had, like, for 3 months we had this car, and we just drove around in this car. Like, how we survived, I have no idea. And for some reason Vanessa drove and I didn't drive. And I don't wonder why that was. can't remember now. Anyway, she just drove. We had this like Toyota Corolla or something. And I remember when we got the car, we had to pay like it was like 10,000 shillings or something. We had all this money, like a foot high of shillings that we had to give to the guy when we literally just arrived, and there was a guy there. We just gave him all this money, like in the car park, and he just gave us a key for the car. And I remember saying to him, "Does this car? Is there any kind of what happens if the car breaks down or whatever?" And he was like, "It's a Toyota," and I was like, "All right then." So we just drove off. The car had a rough life. The whole front of it got pulled off at one point, and we had to go to a garage and get it like sort of like riveted all back on again. That's because it kind of got stuck into the sand, and Vanessa like reversed out of the sand, but the front of the car was still in the sand, so they pulled the front of the car off, and we must have had 30 punctures. Because when you get a puncture in Kenya, you just rock up and someone just patch the puncture, and then you just put it back on the car, and then it's, you know, I don't know if anybody ever buys a new tire in Kenya. They probably all come from Germany. They're probably all old tires from Germany or something. But you get very good at changing tires. Like I had a puncture on the motorway recently, and I was out there. Got it changed. Like it was like a pit stop in a Formula One race. I was like, amazing. So the trick is, though, a lot of people don't know how to change tires. It's like a bit of a lost art. But the trick is to always loosen the bolts before you lift the car off the ground. So that's a little trick. So anyway, when we went to Mount Kenya, we decided we would carry all our own gear up. We wouldn't get any porters. Here comes the rain. We should really have got some porters, because, you know, like it's good for the local economy and stuff. But we decided we wouldn't for some reason. And so we had like these massive rucksacks with all our food and everything else. I think to keep the weight down, all we took lentils, flour, and that might be in it, which lentils and flour. Maybe we had some rice, lentils, flour, rice. Yeah, I think that's what we had. So it didn't actually work very well, that kind of diet. I think we got malnutrition. So anyway, so we're walking up there up to the mountain, and it takes like a day to get up to the sort of base camp of Mount Kenya on the Tillman Hut or the Shipton Hut or something. And then the next day we kind of walked around to the other side, because we wanted to do like the traverse of Mount Kenya, which has not been done for like many decades. And now having tried it, I understand why that is, because it's not there anymore. So anyway, but as we're walking in, we had these like huge, huge packs, like weighed an absolute ton. And anyway, so everyone, all the porters, they were like, oh, to Vanessa, like, oh, you shouldn't carry that, it's too heavy for you, and you're a woman, and you're a weak Irish woman, and all that kind of stuff. Like literally every half an hour, someone would make some comment about how she was a woman, shouldn't be carrying this heavy rucksack. Now, Vanessa could have come home and she could have written some diatribe that could have been printed by Climbing Magazine or Outside or Rock and Ice about how the porters on Mount Kenya were sexist, misogynist, probably racist, because, you know, if a woman, I saw some women carrying, some black Kenyan women carrying heavy loads, no one was saying anything to them. And maybe they were consciously aware of that they were being sexist and racist and misogynistic, or maybe it was like subconsciously, maybe they didn't even know any better, or maybe really like they should all be like re-educated, and even, you know, if maybe the, you know, the authorities should get involved, and you know, maybe trying to identify people who should maybe get the sack and shouldn't be doing that job if they can't, you know, control the racist, misogynistic, the sexist, racist kind of things. Anyway, but she didn't do that, because, you know, she's a fucking adult, and she knows that none of those people said that because they were racist or sexist or misogynistic. It's just that they don't see many women carrying massive fuck-off rucksacks up that trail, and they were a mixture of concern for her because she was carrying a very heavy weight, and also probably thinking they could get some extra work carrying this, carrying stuff up for her and stuff. And so it's a mixture of concern and, hustling, which is like what people do in Africa. They always hustle. So, yeah, I was also, I also could come back, and the number of people who use the racial slur, Mzingu, is it Mzingu? Mzingu? Like every day I'd be walking along and it'd be like, hey, Mzingu, like this kind of stuff. And Vanessa had this story, because Vanessa went and worked in an orphanage in Africa before I met her. And, she was there with this American who was a little bit overweight. And all the Africans would be like, hey, fat mama all the time, which is not only sizist, it's just offensive. It's like, we should be celebrating, fat people. So, I could have written a thing about how deeply offended I was as a white person, as a minority, to go to Africa and to be treated. It wasn't just what people said, it was just the looks people give me. Like, some people would look at me and they'd be like, you're not black, you're white, what are you doing here? Little stuff like that. Even just sometimes they didn't look, but I could just tell they were just thinking racist thoughts. They might even not known they were thinking it, but I know they're thinking it. Like, even the fact that they weren't thinking it, consciously not being racist, is actually a sign of being racist. Because if you weren't racist, then you will be able to be aware of having racist thoughts, and knowing that they're not racist. So it was lots of subtle things. Basically, I've never been to such a racist place as when I went to, those African countries, apart from when I was in like those Arab countries. Like, that was even worse. So, or in South America, that's pretty bad as well. In fact, everywhere, France, God, don't get me started. Norway, oh my God. Sweden, that's even worse. Oh my God. In fact, pretty everywhere you go, it's just a cesspit of like intolerance, bigotry, racism, and all that kind of stuff. Like, I do think just best to stay. Like, I like it around here because everyone's the same, apart from some people are Protestants. They look at you like, can't tell if you're a Protestant or a Catholic, or maybe you're an atheist. That's even worse. So I just try and keep myself to myself. I try not to, even Vanessa, my kids, I sometimes I'm not quite sure what they think about me or, what they think or anyway. So I was going to talk about that, and I was going to write something about it, but I was like, what's the point? It's completely pointless. So I won't, but I always take this view that Malcolm X, one of the big things, like Malcolm X is like your classic, thinking everything through a racial lens, like he would do. It's like the time or whatever. But when he went traveling, it's like going on interrailing or something. But when he went to the Middle East, I think he went to Mecca, and then he went traveling around Africa. But it really helped him to readjust his brain to a more global kind of citizen, where he probably didn't take things or people quite as seriously as he did before. And I think it makes you more compassionate, I think, the more you travel. I might have told this story before, but I remember I was once in this, so I have this story, I actually wrote a story about this. is when I was in Namibia, like Vanessa's got like really crazy kind of hair, like Irish people. Like Irish people have crazy hair. It's kind of to do with all that alcohol in their DNA or something. And we're in Namibia, and there was these three little girls, and I think they were like hustling for some money or food or something. So I was giving them our food we didn't need. And then Vanessa was there, and they started reaching up and like touching their hair. And I was like, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's racist to touch someone's hair who's not the same as you, you know. So I was giving them a little lecture, you know, about unconsciously kids, you know, unconsciously you're being racist there. So please stop touching your hair. So I'm sure after that, they probably thought like, oh, I'm glad I met that white guy. Like he's really put me straight on stuff. So anyway, but I was in this hot tub somewhere in like a pool in the desert in America, and there was a black woman in the hot tub. It's just like a not hot tub. It's one of these anyway hot pool in the desert. So I was sitting in this thing, and the subject of these girls touching your hair somehow came up, and I told this story about the girls touching Vanessa's hair and how I told them they were racist or something. I was joking at the time, but I think she thought I was being lit, you know. Anyway, and then she started telling me about her sister had really frizzy hair and how white people often came up and wanted to touch it, and that she really did think it was racist. So I was like, well, I've got this friend Alex who's Norwegian, and he's got really, really frizzy, like Afro kind of hair, like sideshow bob kind of hair. Like it's crazy, this like crazy kind of hair, and it's red. It's like red Viking Afro kind of hair, and like all his life, people are always reaching up to touch his hair. Like Norwegians or anywhere he goes in the world, people are like drawn to his hair because it's like it's kind of magic. And I was like, do you think when people touch his hair, they're being racist, or do you think they're just being humans? And as I said it, like the woman's face, like people are living internalized simulation of reality. For a split second, you could see that the actual objective reality was breaking through, and then she blinked and it was gone, and she probably just wiped out the entire conversation we just had, and then we just talked about something else. So it would be interesting to, it's always interesting to talk to people who feel like they are a victim of something, a victim of sexism, racism, you know, a victim of themselves, of their dyspraxia, dyslexia, you know, clumsiness, you know, fatness, whatever. In the, like often when you try and have a conversation with them and you're trying to talk them down a little bit, if like things aren't quite so bad as you think they are and the world's not quite as bad as you think it is, they really don't want to give it up in a way, because it's like part of their identity. Like it's what makes them special in a way, you know, to be. I often feel sorry when you're in Africa. You would often see Americans, black Americans, African Americans in Africa, and they totally stood out there. Although they kind of look the same, like if you're, you know, if your heritage is Nigerian or something and you're in Africa but you're American, you just look like you're an American, but you neither feel like, I'm sure that if you were there, if you lived there long enough, you would start feeling this racist thing coming from other Africans. It would treat you differently because you're not like them, like you are an American. It'd be quite an interesting kind of experiment. But people, yeah, it's really, I think it's really important for people to feel like the underdog or whatever, unless it's real. Like if you're really dealing with someone with real misogyny, real racism, real hate, all that kind of real bigotry, then that's not something you wanna be dealing with or hold on to. So yeah. So what's that got to do with climbing? nothing at all, I guess. But yeah. I can't really add any more to that, really. I think I should just probably finish this podcast and do something else. So, I apologize if this podcast is a little bit shorter. I don't apologize if it was offensive. Like, if you're offended, then why, really? You know, why? And get out, go traveling, go see the world, and get over yourself. And I guess peace, you know, namaste, whatever they say, was it namaste? Anyway, these views are all my own, and I do apologise if I upset anybody. And if you ring this number, there will be a helpline, which will be able to, you know, sort of talk you down, and you know, and all that kind of stuff. So until next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.